Thanks for making us part of your day. From our studios high above Columbus and Wacker Drive, you're listening to WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis. Okay, NFL, I have a problem with you, and I'm looking directly at you, Roger Goodell. No, it's not the halftime. We're going to get to that in a second, because I know several people, many people have problems with that. But the problem I have is, if you can't move the Super Bowl to Saturday, can we make it a little earlier? Would that be so bad?
I'm scared, because you were looking at me, and it was the mom look.
I had that mom look last night.
Yes, you did.
We had a house full of people. We had a big Super Bowl party. A lot of second graders were there, a lot of moms, dads from the school, and a lot of kids in the room. So I do want to get to that piece of it, too.
I'm happy that you showed up for work today. Kudos to you, because you hosted over 60 people.
Well, we have the big, fat Greek and Italian family, which is an automatic 40. And then we had a lot of people from the school, you know, kind of just parents and stuff like that stopped by. And when I say stop by, it's true, because the Super Bowl ends so late that we literally had a lot of people say, hey, we got to take the kids, you know, school night. We got to get out of here. I'm like, oh, the party's just, it's not over yet.
Do you have a few stragglers that overstay?
Oh, yeah. No.
But do they overstay their welcome? So do you have to give them hints? Like, how do you tell them to leave?
With so many people with kids, it felt like the second the game was over,
okay,
cleared out.
Well, that's good.
But I think what's interesting is how they left early because of school night. So that would be my pledge. If we're not going to go to Saturday, can we do it a few hours earlier? Do people think that's a good idea? Do you like that idea? I do. I'm just saying. Maybe it would be better, though, if they left before halftime. If you think about some of the reaction that halftime is getting, was it too much? You've seen a number of people weigh in on this. Here's my favorite tweet of the day on this. Halftime show reduces risk of wardrobe malfunction by eliminating most of the wardrobe.
You know what? If I look like that when I'm 50, I would definitely be doing that.
Well, you know what's funny you say that? Because I was looking at some of the moms in the room, and I'm right in the middle of those ages of the two women who are up there performing, and I had a look of jealousy on my face.
Yeah,
if you really
want
to know the truth, I was like, I can't do that.
So,
and I would look ridiculous trying to do any of that.
I don't know, Anna. I think you could probably.
Oh, no,
you
no,
could
no.
try a little. How old is Gabby?
Gabby is 8, so 7 and 8 year olds, second grade.
And she watched it with you.
Well, she was running around.
Okay.
But I'm not going to lie, as I looked around the room, I wish I had a video camera. Because if I had shot the reactions of everybody in the room, the parents in the room with young kids, lots of them, I gotta say, a lot of looks on their faces like, whoa, boy, this is getting a little out of control. I don't want to have to explain any of this. I'm looking at it. I think we all expected they'd have a sexy performance. But you know what? I blame the cameraman. I do. I mean, the uber super tight shots of like Shakira's tongue and, you know, J-Lo's everything.
Where she was sliding across the stage.
Right. And if she wasn't showing it, she was pointing to it. And it was all there. And it was hard to look anywhere else because they were such close up shots, right? So hard to see.
And if you have a large television.
I just wonder about you. If you were in the room and there were kids there, be honest. Do you think were you cringing a little bit? We had some cringing.
We definitely
had some cringing in the room.
I was surprised by the stripper pole, but I figured, was that because she was in the movie Hustlers and that's why she wanted it? I was a little surprised that her moves
she learned as part of that role.
Right.
Yeah, that she sort of brought in.
So was she promoting the movie? Is that part of why she decided to incorporate the pole and the dance?
Janet Jackson wants her career back.
Exactly. Remember, that was not okay. The wardrobe malfunction back then. So, I mean, I guess that's the question, and it's such a weird thing because it's about female empowerment. Is that true, or is it just about kind of selling sexuality? That's, you know, that's where it starts getting a little bit like, ooh.
I loved seeing Shakira with her she had boots on, but they were flats, and mm-hmm. she was running all over the place, and I loved seeing her play the drums. That was awesome.
Yes, drums, she was on the guitar at
one
point.
Yeah, I loved seeing her play all the musical instruments, really talented.
Yeah, I don't know. I also heard a comment from someone who said, you know what, the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, they put on a pretty sexy performance. There's no stripper pole or anything like that, but it's super sexy. I mean, it's part of the NFL, right? And that's, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah, I'm always torn. I don't know if I'm always torn. Is it too over the top? Is it? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But then part of me is also, man, I wish I looked like that. I think that's what we're all thinking.
Yeah, 312, not a prude, but what about the Me Too movement? So that's
right.
what you're hearing. You're like, hey, you can't have it every way, both ways, always. I think that is just an inherent part of their performance, that we knew this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, it shocked a little bit at moments. It really did. It really did. Did not like soft porn on primetime game. I wonder if you're a parent, 616, because I don't know if this is just for parents, but that was what I was witnessing in that room, just looking around, that the parents in particular, like, oh, my kid's not looking here, or just being uncomfortable watching it and sharing that moment with your kid. I saw that too.
You know, it's funny, while you guys are talking, I'm watching Janet Jackson, just to, well, who wouldn't? But it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
The dress and the movement and stuff. So, you know, they got so afraid for so long, the NFL, that is, they just moved past it now.
Well, it definitely wasn't a snooze fest like a couple of years.
No. There are some, I saw some calls to get the FCC to fine Fox for the indecency thing. The same thing that relates to what you're talking about, Steve, that the fines that were in the Janet Jackson situation, that should happen again. I don't go that far with it. I will say I did notice discomfort in the room, and particularly with people who are like, okay, is my kid watching? Good, they're not. They're running around the room like a crazy kid.
It's like when you're watching a movie with your parents or grandparents or kids, and there's a steamy scene, and then you're like, oh, this is just uncomfortable.
The worst part for us in our room was our Uncle Petey trying to mimic Shakira's moves.
So oh, we're like, that would oh, have been, my I would have loved to have seen
oh,
that.
You don't do that.
That could have been a viral video.
It was a little too much. Do any of these people who are questioning the performance, 217, watch music videos?
Yeah, that's
good
what
point.
I,
my 10-year-old granddaughter is in dance, and they pretty much
they do
the same kind of moves.
That's very true. That's very true.
This is an interesting comment. 312, great for Vegas, not a halftime show. Because there is sort of that family-friendly viewing kind of element of the Super Bowl. You know everybody's gathered in front of the TV with kids of all ages.
What did Lady Gaga do the one year that she did the halftime
show? She came
down
from the ceiling.
Yes, that was so awesome. I remember that.
So she wowed.
Lauren, I love that.
Yeah, no, I kind of mentioned this last night. I thought the show was great. You know, they're very talented, obviously, but based on the performances we've seen in the past with like Katy Perry coming in on that giant tiger or whatever it was, and then Lady Gaga
sharks
dropping from the ceiling. So it's kind of weird not really seeing something out there.
Yeah. Oh, so you thought it disappointed in that way?
Well, yeah, in terms of, you know, some big production type thing.
That Lady Gaga performance and that Katy Perry was really, really good. They pulled out all the stops.
630, it was the crotch shots that did not need to be done.
Yeah, that's when she was sliding across the stage on her knees.
815, why are we so uptight about things like this? See,
That's what I mean. I can kind of see that,
runs
too.
Runs the gamut.
Yeah.
Remember, J-Lo is a parent. In fact, her daughter was on stage.
She
Let's not forget about that.
Adorable and a very good voice as well.
Very talented,
Emmy. Mark Anthony also tweeted out that he was so proud of her.
Yeah, that was a cool moment. This 7-8 is also saying, though, how does she feel about her own children watching it? This person thinks disgusting. So it's, you know,
I think always somewhere in the middle. I'm sure somewhere in the middle there lies the truth.
Here's something. Oh, here's truth right here. Nick, those hips don't lie. It's the Latin culture. Very passionate.
Yes,
I couldn't take
true.
My eyes off it. LOL, yeah. So hot.
When you think about the traditional Latin dances as well.
Yeah.
So
I just want someone to sit and do some folk songs or something. It's exhausting watching them.
You want Bob Dylan up there?
Folk songs.
All they're running around.
Folk songs.
Just sit down, relax a little bit.
It was too much for you, Steve.
Too much moving.
Yeah. Well, you know, thanks for those comments. Keep them coming. We're going to continue to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl because we have a couple of guests coming up here. We've got a reporter with the Daily Mail. She's going to check in with us. She was in Miami for the big game. Talk about some of the celebrities, the Chicago connections, and some other stuff to talk about. What was your favorite Super Bowl, too? Super Bowl ad, I should say. A couple of them moved people to tears in my living room. There were some people saying, is it dusty in here?
I mean, it was, I cried.
Google was one of them. I think the little boy, the 13-year-old football standout star who ran through across America and then ended up in the stadium live, handed the football over to begin the game. That was pretty good, too. Okay, stay with us here on WGN Radio. More to come. We've been talking about the halftime show and your comments and thoughts about, was it too much? Was it too sexy? Not family friendly enough? 708, Anna, I was watching it with my 85-year-old mother. I was very uncomfortable. My mom made a comment about the tongue part. Uncomfortable is the word. Seriously, a stripper pole? I have a lot of respect for J-Lo. Another person tells us, 312, getting where she is, However, very sexy, a lot of shaking. Shakira at one point was shaking and bent in such a way from the front I could see everything, I think is what she's saying. I could see everything. Halftime dancers, very athletic. Why reduce it to objectifying bare derrieres and bajayjays? No worse than primetime TV, 312. During the week, people getting shot and stabbed on police shows, so we're kind of used to seeing all kinds of things. Thanks for your comments. Keep them coming. We'll continue to talk about halftime and some of the Super Bowl ads coming up, but let's talk about the Super Bowl and the fun and all the entertainment and things going on down there in Miami. Did you see singer Demi Lovato, her rendition of the national anthem? If you think about it, you've got on a scale of 1 to 10, with Whitney Houston being the gold standard, okay, she's a 10. Did you think Demi was up there maybe at 8 or a 9? A lot of people liked what they heard. Let's listen, hear it again, a little bit of it.
For the land of the free. And the home of the brave.
Very, just, I loved it. Here's the interesting part. You go back 10 years ago, you talk about dreaming big and then living up to your dreams and maybe even being inspired by putting something down in writing. She tweeted, Demi Lovato tweeted 10 years ago, 2010 tweet, one day I'm going to sing the national anthem at a Super Bowl. One day, the platinum-selling singer tweeted in 2010 when she was 17 years old. How about that? How cool is that? Alicia Quarles, senior news correspondent with the Daily Mail TV, is in Miami for the Super Bowl and all the festivities. You can catch Daily Mail TV on Channel 9 at 3 p.m. Hey, Alicia, thanks for calling into the show. Are you still down there in Miami?
My pleasure. Actually, I flew back this morning because we had to record Daily Mail TV. So I went right from Miami to our studio here in New York.
Yeah. What did you think of the halftime performance? We're getting a lot of comments about that today. You were there live. I don't know if you were working too hard to really witness it or if you got to catch it on the screens or in from the stands somewhere. Live, did it look the same as it did? Did it feel the same?
I've gone back and watched it now today on television. But the same. There was so much energy. I had really great seats. I was about 18 rows in. So you could really feel the electricity. It was fantastic. And I know that a lot of people were saying it was too vulgar. You have to think, this is the Latin culture. This is what the women do. And the tongue thing that Shakira was doing that's controversial, it's actually an homage to her Lebanese culture. It's a form of yodeling in a lot of countries. So that movement is what you make when you're making that sound.
Oh, so that was sort of a cultural thing. Okay, is she known to do that in her performances, maybe?
She is known to do it in her performances. So depending on where you're from in the world, a lot of people knew exactly what she was doing, but most Americans didn't.
Yeah. I think I had problems with camera angles. I think that it overemphasized things, and that's why I was asking about live, if it was a little different. We had a couple of people, our listeners, comment on that, too. It's like so close up that you just, there's nowhere else to look, right?
Right. Exactly. I mean, once that stripper pole came out with J-Lo, I guess.
You knew what you were up for.
We didn't have that yet. We knew what we were up for. But to your point, people at home probably had a different vantage point of view than I have.
I bet. Was it fun to be out there? Just sort of on a personal note. I mean, I know you get to cover some awesome things for Daily Mail TV, and you guys are always front and center for all things entertainment and with celebrities. But the Super Bowl is kind of out there in a way that, I mean, it just feels like one in every three people is a celebrity. It's just the center of the world for celebrities to come. They all show up for the game, and they go for the parties, too, I guess.
They go for the parties. I think this is probably my eighth or ninth Super Bowl I've covered.
Wow.
And to your point, the celebrities come around, but so do the politicians. I mean, everybody's just tripping over everyone. The first night I was there, I saw Lizzo perform, and then Harry Styles came out, and they did a duet together. Then you had the Fanatics party, which when you walked into the party, every single person got a number 24 jersey in honor of Kobe Bryant. And it was really a celebration of his life and legacy. He and Gianna's, and then you had Shaq's Funhouse later that night, so Gronk's beach house, Gronkowski and his brothers and fathers were out on the beach drinking. So it's a wild time, but it's a good time.
Yeah, so talk about the Kobe sort of, we had heard in advance of the Super Bowl that there would be some tributes and some ways to honor Kobe. I think I missed almost all of them. The one you just mentioned I didn't know about. What else did you see, Alicia?
Well, I think the most touching one for me was definitely Shaquille O'Neal. He does a party called Shaq's Funhouse. And this year, all of the proceeds, ticket sales, were donated to Kobe's foundation and also to the other victims of that terrible helicopter crash. Mm-hmm. And from there, he had Diddy come on stage. He had DJ Khaled come on stage. And all of these, you know, people were talking about Kobe's life and legacy. And so he was very much alive. Even as you were walking around Miami, the NFL put up tributes to Kobe on buildings. And so although it was a fun party atmosphere, it was actually, you know, there's a tone of stubbornness just thinking about Kobe and that loss.
Yeah, no, I believe that. I definitely do. A lot of people in the NFL and people connected to it certainly knew him, and others just, you know, just respected him. I want to ask you also about back to the celebrities. You mentioned they're all there, and it's weird to see worlds intersect. You mentioned politicians are there. Of course, you have a lot of athletes and former pro athletes who are there, and people from every area all over the world in terms of celebrities. At one point during the game, they did a cutaway, and we saw Kevin Hart on the field. You saw Jay-Z and Beyonce and Paul McCartney. And then what's interesting, I saw something later. Jeff Bezos, the world's richest man, the Amazon founder, we all know. He was pictured in a suite hanging out really cozy with Lizzo. They just said he's his biggest fan. It's just wild to see how they intersect.
It's wild. Actually, to your point, Jeff Bezos was actually out partying the night before with his girlfriend, Lauren Sanchez. So you have the world's richest man who's partying at the same party I'm at, like regular, quote-unquote, just like us. My friend Dr. Oz was hanging out with Paul McCartney. I mean, it's just very odd pairings. Like I said, Lizzo and Harry Styles. Pitbull did the pre-show, and I was hanging out with him. And then there's Anthony Scaramucci back there. Of course, the Mooch was had the position in the White House for 11 days as press secretary. So it's a completely odd mixture of people, but they're all coming together because they love football, and they're kind of fanning out over each other.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to see that. Are you, when you're at a party like that, though, are you working or were you not working? Are you just kind of hanging out watching?
I was hanging out watching. So, you know, today on Daily Mail TV, you'll see we do a recap. So it's all about insider access. A lot of people cover the red carpets, but my goal is to get inside and see what's really going down.
Yeah.
So I wasn't working, but I was working.
I wonder, you know, even though you get to see and meet celebrities all the time, was there someone you ran into at the Super Bowl? You're just kind of like, wow, this is really cool.
Oh, gosh. Like, okay, who was the coolest one this time? I've got to say here. Well, the Gronkowski sightings were out of control. One morning we were on the beach trying to meditate, and then you see the 49ers cheerleaders come up, and you see Rob Gronkowski jump into this cold water at like 8 a.m. and catch a football and come back out being crazy. And at his beach house party, he was taking shots. I don't know if it was cool. It was just very odd. These Gronkowski sightings all over the place.
Yeah, I believe it. Gronkowski is known to party a little bit himself. I've heard.
Yes.
I've heard he does take, he enjoys himself. He does a nice job with that.
He enjoys himself. Yep, he definitely. Miami will never be the same. I tell you that.
It's so cool. So with Daily Mail, you folks always have the scoops on everything. I mean, it's just everything regarding celebrities and entertainment in particular. I did see a couple things that I didn't see anywhere else. You right away had something about how Andy Reid will go to the White House Super Bowl celebration. That just crossed the last hour or so, that he's Kansas City Chiefs coach heading to the White House. Also, we heard from Patrick Mahomes. How could I forget his name? That he is excited, of course, and that he had a tweet from years and years ago when he said he was going to, he just envied the fact that quarterbacks who get to go to the Super Bowl can say, I'm going to Disney, Disney World. And he's like, now here I am. It's again, another celebrity kind of said years and years ago, I want to be there. And look, they're there.
They're there. Dreams do come true. Yes, Andy Reid, it's not shocking to me that he's going to the White House. A lot of the Trump family were actually at the game. They were in a suite. They're supporting it. And then, for Mahomes to already be at Disney World and to be there and make this happen, it's full circle between him and Demi Lovato. If you think about it, just a couple of years ago, she had overdosed. People thought she wasn't going to live or survive. So to see her thriving and to see Mahomes' dreams come true, it was a cool Super Bowl.
Yeah, it really was. It really wasn't to see her in that position. We saw her at the Grammys as well, of course, making that statement about addiction and really sort of trying to connect with people who have gone through that, who are going through that, and talk about getting her life back together. That kind of stuff is very inspiring to see, and to see her doing so well.
Absolutely. And apparently Jay-Z was the one who made that happen. Her manager, Scooter Braun, put out a message on his Instagram thanking Jay-Z for making her dreams come true. Of course, Jay-Z has a deal with the NFL where he's helping to curate all the music and all of that. So he's responsible for Shakira and J-Lo and Yolanda Adams and Demi Lovato performing at Super Bowl.
Yeah. All right. Alicia Quarles, thank you for taking time for us and checking in with us
on
WGN. Senior news correspondent with the Daily Mail TV. You can catch her on Daily Mail TV on Channel 9 right here in Chicago at 3 o'clock. Thanks, Alicia.
Thank you.
Talk to you again. All right, Ryan Burrow is going to talk about the Iowa caucuses. They're tonight, starts tonight. What do they tell us? What will we know tomorrow? And why it's likely, if you look at math and history, that only 4 candidates will remain on the Democratic side after the Iowa caucuses are done. More to come here on WGN Radio. We were talking about the Super Bowl in Miami with the Daily Mail correspondent moments ago. We opened that segment with the Demi Lovato National Anthem. 815, Anna, the National Anthem by Demi Lovato is what we should be talking about. She was awesome. I was in tears. The halftime, good talent, but not the right place for that with lots of children watching. We have a number of texts to that effect. 773, I'm a female. The Super Bowl halftime show didn't bother me. What did bother me was the camera operator's choice of angles. I'm with you on that. It was clearly crotch behind driven for them, which was what I thought was immature and personally driven. Okay, that's your thought about what they were doing there. I don't know if the performers get a lot of say over that kind of thing. Maybe they do, but it certainly was hard to look anywhere else. Okay, it's hard to look anywhere else tonight other than the Iowa caucuses. That's the center of the universe in the political world. And we're going to talk to Ryan Burrow about that. He's with ABC News. He's also with WGN Radio News. Ryan, you there?
Hello, Anna.
Hi.
Are you here?
Are you in Iowa?
I am. I'm in Cedar Rapids right now.
Okay.
We are, what, T-minus 5.5 hours till things really get cooking here. And this is going to be a fun experience. I don't know if you've ever been a part of a caucus before.
I have.
If you've ever been sent there. But you've got a lot of wheeling and dealing. You've got a lot of politics on full display. And I find it very interesting that, you know, while we're in Illinois, we go and we cast our ballots. And in Indiana and Wisconsin, you know, you go into a little polling station and no one says anything to you or, you know, you don't have any communication with anyone. Very different here. You could very well be in the same room as your neighbor trying to woo them over to Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg or Bernie Sanders. So this makes for a very interesting experience, that's for sure.
Well, that's what they say is great about the Iowa caucuses. It forces the candidates to really get walk the pavement, shake the hands, meet people at their doorsteps, and really kind of influence people on a very personal level. In order to influence that whole caucus system and pull ahead, you kind of got to do that.
Yeah. How many events do you think these Democratic candidates have held here in Iowa over the last year?
Oh.
Take a guess.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm talking all of them. I'm talking Klobuchar, Buttigieg, all of them.
All of them. I'm all 11 of them. I'm surprised any of them have a voice by the time this day comes. But I will say, okay, let's say 7,329.
Well, it's a little high. 2,300, but 2,300, more than 200 towns, villages, cities they've been to. I just went walking with a guy named Dylan. He is canvassing for Bernie right now in his own neighborhood. A lot of these people obviously are at work and school, so we had a lot of unanswered doors as we walked. And also pretty interesting, he would knock on doors, and he's got a little app that he follows at places where they indicate a person may be willing to caucus for Bernie, or they got on some kind of list. And sometimes you'd walk up and they'd have a Amy sign or a Biden sign, or they'd have Warren literature up there already. So it wasn't very successful for him from the perspective of actually getting to talk to people and meet with people. There was one Republican who shut the door on him. Another woman said that he was waking up her baby. So, you know, I mean,
this is
the kind of ground politics that you get to, though, especially with just a couple hours to go.
You know, you mentioned the technology. I'm just amazed by it because Andrew Yang has all of my emails, and he's regularly checking in with me, and he's very, very highly sophisticated, and the Yang gang's constantly checking in. And then I get one from the Bernie over the weekend and asking you, are you going to show up? Are you going to do your part or whatever? And if you respond to it, I'm told they keep chatting with you. So it isn't just an auto-generated response. Somehow they have a way of responding to your direct question in like almost real time. It's a little crazy.
It is. And they're keeping unbelievable tabs on everyone, and obviously social media helps out, and then they've got these apps that allow them to do this. I mean, Dylan, who I was just walking with, he knew the places that he had been to before and some of the places that he had to go back to just based on this app. And I asked him, I said, is this weird going and talking with your neighbors? He's got an Amy Klobuchar sign right across the street. And he said, no, it's not weird at all. It's just Iowa in February. You know, this is how it is. This is how you do it. I'm very anxious to see how it goes tonight. I'll be in Cedar Rapids for ABC News live coverage, and we'll see how this all goes down.
Yeah, so it's interesting because if history is any guide and the laws of math are any guide and the amount of fundraising that we're seeing is any guide and all those things matter, there are 11 Democrats still in the race. So 7 of them are really mounting a competitive effort there in Iowa. And apparently they're predicting that out of Iowa, there may only be 4 candidates. That's if you look at history, that often is what happens. There's this big shakeout. That's how important Iowa really is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a viability of 15%, and you have to be able to hit 15% at one of these caucus sites to be deemed a viable candidate, and then you can woo people who are below that over to your side. So let's just say Tom Steyer doesn't make it to 15%. Well, then the Biden people can try to convince the Steyer people, hey, come on over to our side, or the Bernie people, or what have you. And some of these backdoor deals are apparently being made right now, some of them more public than others, but that's kind of the way it goes. But, you know, if you're someone like Amy Klobuchar, who invested so much time and energy into Iowa, you know, it's a neighboring state for her, for Minnesota, and you know, if she is deemed not a viable candidate at a lot of these caucus sites, well, you know, what does that mean for the future of her campaign? Because, you know, Minnesota's still a ways away, and where is your path from that perspective? So, yeah, it's going to cause a lot of people to sit back and reflect. That being said, if she does very well, you know, that could boost her into, you know, a new tier, a new level to kind of compete with the Bidens and the Bernies and the people we've been talking maybe a little bit more about.
What are you seeing or hearing now? The polls I saw, I think this morning, talked about Bernie has a slight edge, and then I saw another one that said Bernie and Biden are neck and neck in Iowa. What are you seeing?
Too close to call. You know, we had over the weekend the Des Moines Register CNN poll was supposed to come out, and that was going to be the big one that would kind of give us a better roadmap going into this caucus as to who had the lead. Because you've got to understand, here in Iowa, and the polling that's taken place since November, Warren has been on the top, Buttigieg has been on the top, Biden has been on the top, Sanders has been on the top. So, you know, as far as honing it in and figuring out today who it is that's going to come away with a victory, and really, what is defined as a victory here? I mean, there are delegates that are going to be split up. Some people may win
more
of a popular
vote. Yeah, it's weird this year. Wait, Ryan, start that again, because this is different this year. There are some new rules taking shape in terms of the way things are going to be reported.
Yeah, exactly. So, first of all, what would happen is the first tally would happen at one of these caucus sites, and then the people who are not deemed viable under 15% would then shuffle to another candidate. And that's what happened in 2006. Now, what did not happen in 2016, what did not happen in 2016 is the numbers of that first poll ever coming out. So they never knew who actually led the way after the first one. The second time, the final vote at these caucus sites included all the people that got moved over. So now they're going to include all of the information from that first poll. So that's essentially going to be the popular vote. So if Bernie Sanders wins that one, and then, you know, all the Steyer people or Yang people or whatever who's not deemed viable then move over to Biden, and Biden ends up getting more of the states, well, then the Bernie Sanders people will say, look, but we still won the popular vote. And then, you know, they can move forward and go. I mean, it's quite possible that everything, that you could have three people walking away saying that we were the winners tonight.
Right. Well, that's just it. It gives everybody something to hang their hat on. I did see Pete Buttigieg sort of taking advantage of the fact that he's one of the few candidates who doesn't have to be in Washington and putting a lot of stake in Iowa, trying to really surge. I mean, he's still doing well, it sounds, but he's nowhere near Bernie and Biden. Is that right, Ryan?
You know, he's been hanging around the 15-16% mark. He hit above 20% when he led. He's got a really good ground game here. It's very interesting, though, Anna, because I spent the last 5 days tracking these candidates, going to their rallies, mm-hmm. and you would think Pete Buttigieg, young guy, 38 years old, would have a young audience. That really wasn't the case. It was the Bernie people. It was the Bernie one that had the young audience. Buttigieg had the older audience, so I, you know, and I asked the people at the Buttigieg, I said, is 38 a problem? They say, no, we like that he's 38. We like that he's younger. And then I asked the young people at Bernie, is the fact that Bernie's in his 70s a problem? They said, no, we like that. We like his message. So clearly there's no ageism, or maybe there is opposite ageism going on. I don't know.
The grandmas, they love Buttigieg. This is something that's been well defined. I mean, they do. One of the things you see him doing is really taking a swing at the front runners. I suppose it's no surprise because he needs to emerge strong out of Iowa in order to keep his whole, keep it going, right? And they're emphasizing that Klobuchar and Buttigieg have these Midwest roots. I wonder if that plays well and makes a difference in Iowa, or really doesn't matter.
That's what they're hoping. I mean, Amy Klobuchar really put a lot of eggs in her basket here in Iowa, and she's been campaigning on her Midwest grit, as she calls it. Pete Buttigieg has that kind of down-home style. Buttigieg has had to go after Bernie and Biden for, the fact that they are on top, and they're the ones who seem to be dominating the conversation as to who is going to face off against Donald Trump in November. Buttigieg is saying, look, we've got to stop looking at 2016. 2016 represents Bernie Sanders. 2016 represents, Hillary Clinton and all of that. And Joe Biden gets wrapped up in that. I'm the new face. And we can take a risk on someone who's young. And he made a point that, the Democrats who have been swept into office have done so, have been very young, and they've been part of a movement. So Obama, Clinton, even going back to John F. Kennedy, they've all been these young candidates that have kind of swept in, and he's trying to get that in people's minds. But, Bernie Sanders has continued to call for a transformation of the United States, and Joe Biden continues to be laser focused on Donald Trump. I mean, everything out of his mouth is about Donald Trump and his policies and his attitudes and his demeanor and things like that. So everyone clearly has their campaign efforts staked out. It's just a matter of what resonates with the people here in Iowa.
Yeah, and that's the question. So tomorrow morning, we'll know that, I suppose, and we'll also know maybe who's maybe not going to be in the race anymore, or at least who's sort of leaning that way. Do you think there'll be any announcements tomorrow about that?
I don't know. Voter turnout here, or a caucus turnout, is going to be the big deal. Mm-hmm. because only 16% of caucusers here in Iowa actually went through the process in 2016. 16%. And then if you go to 2008, when they had their highest, that was when Obama was running, they had 240,000. So that was a little bit higher than the 171,000. So a big part of it, a lot of people are going to the campaign events, they're going to the concerts, they're enjoying all of this, but at the end of the day, are they actually going to show up at the middle schools and churches and public spaces? Are they actually going to caucus, or were they just along for the ride?
How's the weather? Just final note there.
It's 30 degrees and sunny. Okay. Midwesterners can't complain.
No,
if you're
problem.
From Florida, you're complaining. If you're a Midwesterner, it's February.
Not a factor for turnout then. I just wanted to check that out. All right, Ryan, ABC News and WGN Radio News is Ryan Burrow out there in Iowa covering the caucuses. Thanks for checking in with us.
Sounds good. Take care.
You too. We've got an important week in politics anyway. We've got the Iowa caucuses tonight, 7 o'clock starting Chicago time. State of the Union address tomorrow. Impeachment trial comes to a close, expected on Wednesday with a Senate vote. Thursday's nothing much, but then Friday, the Democratic candidates take to the stage in New Hampshire, the next state. They've got a primary there. That's the next one for the 8th debate. So that's all coming up. But coming up here, WGN's Mark Carmen. He was down in Miami covering the Super Bowl. He has thoughts, and he'll be with us coming up. Anna DeVlantis here on WGN Radio 147, and I woke up this morning and I saw hashtag Mitch Trubisky trending. So now, why would Mitch Trubisky be trending, Mark Carmen? Why?
It's never going away,
Anna. Why?
This was the Mitch Bowl. Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo could have been here. Patrick Mahomes, who should have been here.
Yeah.
It's painful is what it is.
There's a lot of agony still, and it was well represented on the Twitterverse this morning. I'm sure you did not overlook that, the fact that we could have had so-and-so, and I guess now it's on Mitch Trubisky just proving that he was the right pick, and we hope that happens. The Onion headline today, victorious Patrick Mahomes. Thanks, Bears, for drafting Mitchell Trubisky. Thank God, because I would not be here today if I had been selected by Chicago. So just rubbing it in.
There was this guy that was drafted in the 6th round this year by Jacksonville. His name was Gardner Minshew out of Washington State. He also played at East Carolina. He threw 21 touchdown passes and 6 interceptions. as a rookie, as a sixth round pick. And I talked to him at the Super Bowl, and I said, hey, Gardner, did you have any contact with the Bears? Were they interested? Yeah, actually, I did. I met with two teams at the Combine, Jacksonville and the Bears. And I'm like, because Matt Nagy had said this in the middle of the year because I had asked him, do you guys ever have any interest in Minshew? Because he was this late round pick the Bears could have had.
Yeah.
We knew about Gardner, so they knew about. I mean, Gardner is not Patrick Mahomes, but I'm pretty sure he's better than Mitchell Trubisky, so that one's kind of a little painful, too, just to throw a little.
Just to make it worse.
Extra salt.
Thank
in the
you. I don't know if you know this. This is a fun fact, but Mitch Trubisky has never thrown an interception in a Super Bowl. That'll make you feel better.
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, he has not. Anyway, fun game. It really was. I mean, I think they were tied at halftime. It just makes them, you know, that much more interesting when you get a game that's a real game.
I thought the best part of the first half of the game was halftime. I mean, it was a 10-10 right there, kind of how you expected. But J-Lo, and I thought Shakira was actually better than J-Lo. I don't know.
Surprisingly, I thought she's a captivating performer.
I mean, the comments on Twitter, it's like, it was a little over the top from a male perspective, but
there's a great comment here. I'm going to get it for you because it's a woman saying, I'm going to sum it up for you because I can't find it right now. My husband loved the halftime for all the reasons, all the wrong reasons. He was riveted kind of thing.
The women, I watched the game with three women and one of my friends, and the women, they're all saying, got to get to the gym. No, you look great. That's just that, and leave it alone.
I was sitting in a room of other moms from the school and family members who were about that age, in between, or even older, or some a little younger, and there was a little bit of envy going on there as they zoomed in ultra tight to different body parts, and we got to see a number of those. I think you noticed, but it was all overall entertaining, very entertaining. Did you get to see the Super Bowl ads, considering you are covering kind of, game time stuff and really sports?
I had my ad moments. What were your favorites?
I loved the little boy, and that's why I was going to ask you about it, the 13-year-old standout football star who ran across America. I guess he's known for having incredible speed, and then he ended up in the Super Bowl stadium handing over the football. I thought that was such a cool moment.
I totally did not think that was going on at all. Like, I did not, maybe there was news about that before that I missed, but I didn't realize they were going to run in the Super Bowl. And like, that was
it
so awesome.
It shocked me.
Yeah. Really, really creative, super smart, and dialing in all the veterans and, the vets of the game.
Yeah.
Joe Montana and endless, Peyton Manning. It didn't stop. And I'm like, this is a great message. And the NFL is trying to get that you can play football and it's safe and it's a good thing and it builds character, all that, rather than it's really dangerous, don't do it thing going on. Uh-huh. So that was a pretty good way.
I thought it was powerful. And he ran past the Pat Tillman jersey, past the players. People were just cheering him on. And they're like, take it to the house, kid. And you just were rooting for him. I didn't realize he was he's like a real stud already at the age of 13. Maxwell Bunchy Young is his name. He plays football. He was Sports Illustrated Sports Kid of the Year in 2017. This is 3 years later. He's in a Super Bowl ad, and then just to see him show up live is like crazy.
See, that's where we need these ads to have some, I said this to John, I think, some information on the screen or like an app that while we're watching it, because I just thought he was a cute kid running with the football.
Me too.
I had no idea there was this backstory to him.
Well, that's true. You need like a Beavis and Butthead inset or something. Like,
exactly.
This is what we're watching, help us.
What would you have wanted to say, Steve?
Well, I mean, just like some of there were a lot of celebrity ads this year, older and younger. I didn't know who many of them were. Just a little sliver down there. You should know this guy because of this. Or,
yeah. Adds context, doesn't it? I appreciated it so much more.
I like it. A little resume on the screen. This is
CV.
A little in the corner. You could pull that off. Not bad. It would have resonated even further.
Yeah, it didn't resonate with. I mean, it resonated anyway. It was very powerful. But then you're right. I learned a little more about the backstory, I was like, wow, how cool to feature him. I don't know if you noticed this, Mark Harmon and Steve Bertrand, but TB12. Tom Brady was also in a very powerful ad.
So what was that?
Well, remember he tweeted out this cryptic picture, like he's known to do to kind of get people going, his 40 million followers or whatever, of him walking into or out of a stadium. And people thought, is he announcing his retirement? He's 42 and a half years old. Is he announcing he's going to leave New England? He's just moving on. I don't know. and then it ended up being he was a Hulu commercial just talking about, I'm not going anywhere, but you should.
Right,
check out Hulu.
But then at the end of it, his last line, it left it wide open again. Like, he made it out like he was staying. Is that official that you're now staying? Because, or are you just staying with Hulu? And the fact that he put out his picture on Thursday right before the Super Bowl. Hey, man. It's the first time you haven't been in the Super Bowl in a bit here. You won it last year. Why, can you let anybody else have the spotlight for a second here, Tom?
That's a bad attitude, Mark. I mean, you don't like Tom. You don't like Tom Brady.
That was a brilliant ad. That was a brilliant ad, though, because it had everyone you're talking about it for 3 days before it happened.
Oh, fair point. I just thought it was listen. Greatest quarterback of all time, man. I'm not trying to take anything away from him.
Are you sure?
Guy's straight phenomenal. I just thought that there was, you know, at least 10% of it was a little bit rude to the current competitors in the Super Bowl.
I get
that
part, particularly because one of them is his, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
Trained under him, kind of, you could say. You could say that he kind of watched Tom Brady play for a long time, learned from him, and now it was his moment and not Tom's. I get that. I get that piece of it. Were you guys surprised, too, that the ads didn't feature, they weren't sexy? They just weren't sexy. I mean, remember when there used to be supermodels were always in the Super Bowl ads? I remember Cindy Crawford and that Pepsi ad. And you go back in time to the last 20 years. That's what you recall. And that was not a piece of these ads. You didn't see that.
I don't know if I feel just good about myself or Steve. Maybe you the same. But I did not notice that. I thought it was...
You're just supposed to say that. You're newly married.
Right.
And that is your take.
I felt very engaged with all the ads. I wasn't sitting there. Why are there not more scantily clad women on my commercial ads? I didn't have that thought.
I thought Rainn Wilson looked pretty good in that Little Caesars costume.
Oh. 224. My husband wanted to know where Shakira has been all his life. He's like, see? A lot of attention with the husband saying, oh, who's this? Now, who's this? And then other people are just railing on Mitch Trubisky. That's the question, Mark, before I let you go here. I mean, you cover sports, you cover football, you do that very well. And is Mitch Trubisky going to develop? How much more time does he get? I don't know if we're going to be in a Super Bowl next year, but what are we looking for?
Well, here's the good thing. You look at the Niners who are in the Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo was decent this year, but he wasn't a Hall of Fame and or Pro Bowls, you know, level quarterback, and the Niners were in the game, and they had a chance to win. Now, he did exactly, by the way, what Mitchell Trubisky would, in all likelihood, do in the fourth quarter with a great play call, with a bomb that would have won the game if it was on the money, and he overthrew him. But they did get to the game with Garoppolo. So if the Bears can make that defense just a little bit better and maybe get the running game going a little bit more, perhaps you can get there with Mitchell Trubisky. I think that's the positive angle.
Okay. We like positivity. Thank you, Mark Carmen. We appreciate you stopping by. The news is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Money Mondays, and this is when we talk about all things regarding your money and money in general. So here with us, Jonathan Honig, Fox News contributor. He handles investments through his company, CapitalistPig.com. That's where you go, right, Jonathan? You want to find out more about you?
Thank you, Anna. It's great to be with you, and delighted to be with you and Carol as well.
Yes, and Carol, did we mention Carol? Carol Roth is here, too. You remember Carol. She's been on the program a number of times. She's an entrepreneur, recovering investment banker, the creator of The Future File, which is helping families deal with their greatest time of need. And you were on last, and you explained what you do, and I know a lot of our listeners really responded to that, Carol.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody. We had a tremendous number of people who bought Future Files, and if you have any questions in the future, reach out. We can obviously handle them. But such a privilege to be able to help your family organize your wishes and information.
Difficult time, right?
Yeah.
So it's something, and it's one-stop shopping. It's a packet. It's totally thorough. I've just looked through it myself, and it's awesome. All right, guys, I want to turn to the Super Bowl ads. $5 million or more, a little over $5 million for a 30-second spot that doesn't even include the cost of creating the ad or all the other things that go into the putting that media out and the publicity. How does a company justify this? Is it worth it? And do you have a favorite ad?
Well, I mean, for a company like Google, it's literally pocket change. I mean, it's nothing. Of course, for us, $5 million is a lot.
Or Bloomberg, too.
Yeah, same thing. Literally, it's a rounding error for these guys. And there's so few events now from a marketing perspective. Carol and I were mentioning this before we came on, that truly you can get these types of eyeballs and something that affects every demographic, every age. You know, we're in an age of this micro-targeting on Facebook. You know, give me you know, this color and this age and this race and this. This is the type of unique event that you can reach truly a worldwide global audience. That's why the spots are so effective. And of course, Carol, they don't just run during the Super Bowl. They start early in the day or early in the week, and they become almost an event unto themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that a lot of these companies forgot that they had such a big audience and really dropped the ball, pun entirely intended, when it came to putting out the commercials. Because it's one thing to have a clever commercial, but it's another thing to have a commercial that is going to incentivize people to go to purchase their product and service. One of the commercials that everyone loved was Jason Momoa for Rocket Mortgage.
We didn't even mention that on the show yet.
But is anybody going to go to Rocket Mortgage because of that?
I didn't even know it was for Rocket Mortgage.
Right, yeah, exactly. So we all know, I think that the Groundhog's Day one did a really good job in highlighting the product and bringing in the nostalgia. And frankly, and I don't want to get political here, but I think that the Trump ad was a very smart buy from his perspective in order to put out something that he's done front and center in front of a bunch of people who are going to be voting.
Sure, it did seem like a smart choice. Bloomberg had an ad too. I missed it. I didn't get to see the Did either of you see the Bloomberg ad?
I saw one, and it featured a few very unflattering pictures of the president playing golf. So you did almost get the sense that there was almost a boxing match going on between these
billionaires
and political heavyweights, just as the football match was going on the field.
With the billionaire owners and their teams as well.
There's a lot of billionaires. There are billionaire. Bezos was hanging out with Lizzo. I don't understand any of it, but there's a lot going on there. There's, I mean, the celebrity cutaways, you're like, gosh, these celebrities, they all know each other, don't they?
Well,
Lizzo and
together.
Bezos?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
For me, the ads that really worked the best were actually from the big technology companies, which, Anna, they're like public enemy number one now. I mean, everyone, both political parties is hating on Amazon, hating on Facebook, but hating on Google. But I thought Google and Amazon had my favorite ads. You know, Google had a very touching ad about remembering a spouse and using it. It made this technology very human and demonstrated how it improves our lives. And with Ellen DeGeneres and Porsche, they said, what was life like before Alexa? And boy, you remember, geez, what was life like before Amazon? It was terrible. So that, for me, those really worked because they really demonstrated how much this technology has improved our lives.
It's interesting, though. I loved the Google ad from a human standpoint. I will admit, I cried during that ad. Oh. My husband said, are you crying? I said, I am absolutely
Mission
crying.
Mission accomplished,
but,
Google.
But online, people were talking about, that's nice, it's a great ad, but I still don't want to give up my privacy. So even though they were trying to sort of entice people in with this advertisement, I don't know that it was as effective because it brought out that conversation from people around, do you want Google to have all this
information? Yeah, well, that's true. It kind of was a double-edged sword, but I will say it definitely made me kind of well up. And at our
very
Super Bowl
dusty.
Party with a lot of people, it was very dusty
very
in here.
Dusty.
I was like, it's dusty in here. It's really, let's play a little bit of that because I just want to, let's just discuss that for just like, I thought highly effective, but
you're going to make us cry here, Anna?
We're going to see Fantastic. If we can make Carol and even Jonathan. Jonathan, we'll see if he can cry. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Of me and Loretta. Remember, Loretta hated my mustache. Remember, Loretta loved going to Alaska and scallops.
That's where it got me, right there, because they showed the pictures of them when they were young, and Google's giving him all the pictures throughout his life. And he's just
like, some tissue.
We get some.
That's brutal. I couldn't even take it once, let alone two times.
And it's not silly like the MC Hammer ad or even the Groundhog Day ad. I know it's kind of funny, but it just touches something very human. And when you have a product like technology, which doesn't really even exist, right? I mean, Google can't hold it in your hand. I think it's very effective, and that's why it seemed to silence your room and even silence us here for a moment on WGN.
I just hope that he had a future file for Loretta before she passed away.
Good product placement there. I like that. I love that. Yeah, it's just a very powerful, powerful ad. And you're right, it raises to the attention again about tech companies and the focus on them about should the government be regulating them? Should there be more controls? Or like what California just did and said, hey, if you're going to take somebody's data, the new law they passed January 1st, let them know what it is if they request it. And if they say they don't want you to store that data on anymore, then remove it.
hard to actually implement. We're going to see how that actually works, but good idea, guys?
Well, it's not a good idea from a small business perspective. All of these ads that seem to be, or excuse me, legislations that seem to be a great idea that's going to protect you against the big guys always makes it very difficult for new competitors to come into the market. So if you are a startup or a small entrepreneur that has to comply with these rules and regulations the same way that the big guys do, it makes it very difficult, which and at the end of the day, limits your choices. So I don't think that that's the best way to do it. I would prefer for the consumers to stand up and say, we don't want you to do this, and them to have to figure it out in a market setting, because at the end of the day, the big guys always love rules and regulations because it keeps other people out of the market.
Keeps the smaller competitors out. Yeah, I mean, Anna, for me, from an investment perspective, the regulation is a real risk. I mean, look, a lot can go wrong with the economy now to coronavirus and the Middle East. I mean, a lot of things could blow up, but this real threat of a technological regulation. Look, I mean, tech has historically been one of the least regulated elements of the economy and also one of the most productive. So, I mean, God help us if technology becomes, for example, like healthcare, where there's always more abundant regulation anywhere government plays that heavy hand.
Yeah, so you started talking about technology and the success story. Amazon stock at the $1 trillion market cap milestone. It hit that, I think, one day last week at joining the ranks of Microsoft, Alphabet, and Apple. And so you're looking at this. It seems like it's good times for tech. A lot of exuberance. Is this warranted? What do you guys think about all that happening, those type of market cap valuations?
I think it's a real risk for the market because you've got about five or six companies that have over $5 trillion in market value. Mm. And so it's great on the upside when everybody's succeeding and you have Apple and Amazon and Microsoft and Facebook and, you know, whatnot doing well, Google. But there's a huge risk that if any one of them stumbles, that's a huge piece of the market and is going to have a very big impact in terms of people's 401ks and what's going on with their investments.
We have much more to discuss here with Jonathan Honig, Fox News contributor, and he's with Capitalist Pig. He founded the company investment company. CapitalistPig.com is where you go to learn more about Jonathan. Carol Roth, she is the creator of The Future File and has helped some WGN listeners with The Future File, planning for your greatest time of need. We're back with them talking about some events in the news, how they may affect the markets, including what happens at the Iowa caucuses. Who wins? If Bernie wins, some say it may spook the markets. Is that true? We'll talk with them coming up. All right. Our guests are Carol Roth, founder of The Future File, recovering investment banker. She's an entrepreneur. And Jonathan Honig, Fox News contributor, CapitalistPig.com. He has a new book out called A New Textbook of Americanism. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
That is. And, you know, it's at a time in which politics, Anna, is just front and center and dominating the news cycle, A New Textbook of Americanism really presents an alternative to this radical crazy left or this militant nationalistic right. We kind of go back to those original individualistic American capitalist principles, not only just on which the country was founded, but on which the country has historically thrived. So interesting read, and thank you for mentioning it. You can check it out at textbookofamericanism.com.
And if I can give an unpaid plug here, I adore this book. I've bought copies for people in high school, people in college, just to give away people who are interested in learning a little bit more about individual rights. It's short, but it's very, very smart, and it's a good read, so you should definitely
get it.
I'm picking one up. I enjoy all of your books, so that's a new one for me, A New Textbook of Americanism. Jonathan Honig is the author on that. Okay, guys, we want to talk about things going on in the news and the Iowa caucuses, and why would we talk about that when we're supposed to talk about money and finance? Apparently, Jonathan, you told me there's the future people, the futures markets folks, and they're smart people. They can predict all kinds of things, where the price of things are going to come and go. And somehow they put together something that will tell us that they are predicting Bernie Sanders will win in Iowa.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of consternation about just about what's going to develop in the Democratic Party and who, if anyone, was going to challenge President Trump. And at least according to PredictIt, which is an online futures market for political events. You know, oftentimes when they say, who are you going to vote for? Who do you like? You know, people, they might say someone or kind of virtue signal. These what they call prediction markets, you actually have to put money on the line. So they tend to be historically very, very accurate. And coming into now in terms of the Iowa caucus, Bernie's running away with it, it tonight, and also running away with the nomination writ large. So there's a lot of consternation on Wall Street. I know Carol would agree with this about what could happen to this economy if Bernie Sanders not only wins the nomination, but potentially becomes president? You know, we know some of his policies that I don't think I'm being too off to say are historically kind of anti-capitalist, anti-business. So there's a lot of worry on Wall Street of just what could happen. And we've even seen some predictions that if Bernie gets the nomination, you could see the market fall 10 or 15% just on that alone.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to mitigate their risk when they're in the market. So they're trying to allow for all the possible scenarios. And at one point, it was unthinkable that you would have somebody who leans socialist or perhaps even communist like Bernie Sanders potentially coming out as the nominee of the Democratic Party. But it is becoming more and more of a likelihood. Now, I think there is a good chance that because of the number of people in the field, that there is no clear winner and it goes to a brokered convention. And there certainly has been rumblings that if that happens, the Democratic Party does not want somebody with these sort of fringe ideas to take it. So there could be some other set of shenanigans that happens. But this is all just, you know, Carol's conspiracies. But from a market standpoint, as they try to hedge their bets, the idea that somebody would come in with ideas that could be so damaging to the economy, against capitalism, blowing up government spending even more than, you know, the crazy amount that it's already at. These are things that could have a significant impact on the overall economy and then as a result in the market.
And I'll quickly just say, there's no correlation between a Democrat and Republican and the strength of the stock market or the economy market. So right. It's not historically like the market always does better under Republicans. That's not true. But there is a correlation between socialist policies and poverty. We know that historically, whenever socialism's been tried, to the extent it's been tried, poverty and wealth destruction has always been the result. So I think that's the fear of at least the way that a lot of the electorate is going on the right, but certainly on the left.
Well, and you see folks like Michael Bloomberg in Iowa right now campaigning against specifically Bernie and the surge that he's proving. There's some polls that show he will take Iowa, much like your futures markets.
Predict it.
If you want to check it out. But he's saying basically the same thing, is that you've got to watch out because this is not going to be good for business. It's not going to be good for the markets. And he's a centrist, and he's only in the race because he wants to bring some of the policies of the Democrats more centrist, right? He's got a problem with it.
Yeah, and it's funny when you have these people, whether it's a Biden or a Klobuchar or even a Yang or a Bloomberg, and now we're talking about some of their policies as centrist when they're still talking about raising taxes and increasing government spending.
Yeah, address that, Carol.
But it's amazing. I mean, everybody who the Democrats have put up policies that are saying we want to, you know, have a wealth tax. We want to increase corporate spending. We want to increase spending on health care. We want to increase the size of the government. All of these things. Nobody's saying, wow, Donald Trump did a great job with the economy. We don't really like him as a person, but we want to continue those things that are working with somebody who can reach across the aisle and make them better. So nobody's really in that center lane. But given the alternative, the socialist alternative, a lot of people who are in the center are going, well, that doesn't seem too bad of a compromise, even if we may be giving up some of the things that we believe in, because at least at the end of the day, it's not pure socialism.
Okay. You guys, I want to ask you about the coronavirus, the impact on the markets. Obviously, we're feeling for the people who actually have the virus, and there have been a number of deaths specifically in China, and 17,000 affected there. So they're working, health officials around the world working to control that. And of course, here in Chicago, we have some very good folks working on that too. But the impact on the market, you guys see this kind of thing. China's stocks, terrible. I mean, just not the worst day in years, Friday, I believe. Should we worry about this impact on the U.S. economy?
Yeah, their market had actually been closed for a holiday and then closed an extended couple of days specifically because of the virus. So this was the first time it opened. And as you said, dropped pretty precipitously. It's terrific that actually here at home, we saw our own market be able to rally a little bit, even in the face of some of this bad news. And I got to say, I think if China says, let's say there's 300 people that are dead as a result of this, it's probably more like 3,000. I mean, they have really no incentive to necessarily be completely forthcoming. Now, they've stepped in a lot to try to buoy their market and buoy their economy. But you know, Anna, it's not as if China is just this isolated element. They're big consumers of U.S. goods. There's a lot of Starbucks that are closed in China, McDonald's that are closed. But they're also producers of U.S. goods. I mean, the screen of your iPhone is undoubtedly made in China. Millions of other components are made in China. So look, back in 2003, during the SARS epidemic, the market fell about 12%. And I'm not a Cassandra Sandra, but I think it's quite possible that as this virus continues to spread, we could see the market take some type of a meaningful hit.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, is that you don't want to panic. This hasn't gotten to the point where it's panic epidemic yet. But at the same time, the market is actually, I mean, we're still only a couple percentage points away from all-time highs. I think the market is looking for a reason to take a breather. It's healthy. It's normal. And this could easily become the catalyst. Like Jonathan said, whether it's a big business or a small business, there are a lot of people producing goods in China. And after the Chinese New Year's, people come back to the factories. Well, guess what? They're not going to be coming back to the factories right away. And we don't know how long that might happen or what other types of precautions they might take. So certainly it's going to have some impact. The question is, will the market be able to shake that off at some point? And, I do think it's a good reason for a
pause. Let me ask you this, and we just have a minute or two here, maybe a little less than that, but I want to ask you about, so would you take money off the table? Is that what you guys are looking at? This is the kind of thing you deal with, Jonathan?
Sure. I mean, for me, I think it all comes down to you and your own context. So the only people who say that they bought the bottom and sold the top are both liars. So forget about that.
They're like the Vegas gamblers.
Yeah, exactly.
Forget
about trying to buy the bottom and sell the top. It comes back to your own situation. And from my perspective is, look, if now's the time to get your financial house in order. When times are good, not in 2008 and 2009 when times are bad. So if you've had stock that's appreciated, at the very least, start paying down that consumer debt and living within your means. Because to Carol's point, winter is coming, a correction is coming, whether it's this week or next month or next year, we're due. And this market is probably ripe to take a plunge.
And there are a lot of people who have cash on the sidelines. And so it's a good time to wait. And when some of the names that you really like do potentially become cheap after a pullback, know what your entry price is and then deploy the capital then.
Okay. Are you hearing the companies complain about their Chinese relations and getting the parts they need, and companies really in that sort of position?
They're concerned about it. I have clients who are very concerned about it. They're not complaining because they understand that there are real people behind this and there's a reason. But from a planning standpoint, I mean, this is a big, big issue and nobody has an answer, and uncertainty is the worst enemy.
Right. I should have said concerned. You're absolutely right. Human issues first before the economic ones, but we appreciate you both weighing in on that, the economic piece of all this. Jonathan Honig, Fox News contributor, CapitalistPig.com. Get his book, A New Textbook of Americanism, and Carol Roth, The Future File, to help families deal with their greatest time of need. You can get The Future File where, Carol?
At FutureFile.com.
Thank you both. Good to see you.
Thanks, Anna.
Happy Monday. See you again soon, hopefully. We're going to have much more here on WGN Radio, including we want to talk about social media, your imprint. You hear about employers using it. What about colleges? More and more of them are. More to come here on WGN. 2:32 here on WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis, and thank you for your text. We did get a number during our last segment, Money Mondays, about Bernie Sanders. 815, ugh, Bernie Sanders is not a communist, OMG. And then a few of you say he's not, he's a socialist. I would agree with you there. He is a socialist. That's how he identifies, and that's who he is. So we got that.
It's corrected. Kind of funny because he's not a Democrat. I mean, he's running in the Democratic Party, but he is not a member, I don't think, of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, a lot of Bernie hating. Have you noticed this?
It's not Bernie hating, but that's just kind of a quirky thing.
No, I don't mean you. Yeah. I don't mean you. I think
people are scared. Because I think a lot of the moderate Democrats are worried that he can't win in November, and it looks like he's probably going to do pretty well today. So that's frightening to them, yeah.
Yeah, some of the polls, in fact, show him ahead by just a little bit ahead of Biden, and then others show it pretty much neck and neck. So we talked earlier with ABC News' WGN News' Ryan Burrow. He's in Iowa covering the caucuses, and he talked about that. He said, you know, it's really kind of a toss-up, which these things often are.
I can't wait. And I don't know who's doing halftime tonight, if it's Judy Woodruff or what.
But you need another halftime?
This is my football game. I can't wait to get in front of the TV and watch the caucuses.
You're a political junkie.
It's going to be a good night.
I'm into it, too. Although the caucuses, they tend to be difficult to follow sometimes. You go from a library to a gas station to a diner, and they're just spread out in so many places. I do like the exit polls, though, when people come out and talk about what happened.
Good for them for that, because that takes real activism to show up and make your case and, to admit your case in front of other people. I think that's great. I don't know how to do here.
Yeah. Bring up the halftime again, Steve. Here is the 630. Dear sweet baby Jesus, if there's ever going to be another Super Bowl halftime show with a wardrobe malfunction, please let it be this one.
Can I tell you something? When you guys were talking earlier, I think it was on your show. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went back and watched the Janet Jackson video, and I had never seen it.
Uh-huh.
I had not ever seen the malfunction before.
You had never
before.
Seen it? No, all because the fuss it, over that well, back then in the day with Timberlake and him, her, and I she got blamed.
Let me tell you this. I remember the moment it happened because I was looking away. I was at this party, my friend Curtis's house. I was like, did you see that? And then I never did. And, you know, it was kind of blocked online, I think, for a long time. But I just, when you were talking about the two last night, I thought I'd find it, and I found it.
Well, certainly you covered it, right? Remember all the fallout?
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
FCC
we talked about
fines
it a lot. Yeah.
And everything that unleashed. Gee, I'm happy we didn't repeat that last night.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, we gotta get to our next guest. He's on the line here. His name is Sam Pritchard. He's the director of college prep programs at the Kaplan Institute. And, you know, Sam, we talk all the time about how hiring managers are using our social media imprint, that it's kind of part of a regular background check, often is, when you're applying for a job, that an employer will check that out just to make sure everything's just so, or make sure that there's nothing on there that would, you know, kind of shock them or be kind of cross any boundaries that they might be looking for. But now you're here to tell us about how colleges, universities are using this more and more to take a look at students. It's part of the whole process of applications.
Exactly right. Yeah, we have done a survey for the past 15 years of college admissions officers. And, you know, we work with tens of thousands of college applicants every year. And we want to make sure that the guidance that we're giving them is informed by the audience that's going to decide if they're getting in or not, which is admissions officers. And so we conducted a survey with 300 admissions officers from top national, regional, and liberal arts colleges. And we've been conducting this survey for the past 10 years. And we wanted to find out what is the role that social media plays in college admissions. And so we started this in 2008 when really Facebook was just starting to grow its sea legs and Twitter was still in its nascent stages and Instagram hadn't even been born yet. But we realized, as you said, that many students were using Facebook at that time and we understood the potential it had to affect their futures. And so now, 10 years later, we've got data from 2008 till the present on how this is being used. So in our most recent survey, we found that 36% of college admissions officers said that this is something that they do from time to time, to look at applicants' social media profiles to try to learn more about them. And this is higher than last year, but not quite as high as the 40% it was in 2015.
All right, so repeat that again. It's 38%, for emphasis, 38% of colleges and universities say they do look at an applicant's social media history, imprint, go to their social media pages in order to, you know, take a look at them as an applicant.
36% say that this is something that they have done. That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so break it down for us, though, Sam. What is it they're actually looking for when they go and check out your Facebook, your Instagram, or your Snapchat, or wherever they're going? What are they looking for?
There can be a couple things that prompts that that kind of additional research. It can be something that they read on the application and say, that's surprising. This doesn't add up. We've also learned that colleges are really monitoring when there are mentions of their institution online. So whether that institution is actually tagged explicitly or just the word is mentioned, colleges are aware of that. And so if a student is saying, I went on a campus tour at this school and it was terrible, or this is my safety school and they're mentioning the college by name, often colleges will find that out.
That is fascinating. I would not have expected that piece of it. I thought they would be looking for kind of inappropriate behavior mostly, or if they pledge that their life is all about traveling the world to help needy people and then their Instagram account only shows them partying, you know, at a frat house or something. It just feels as if they were looking for inconsistencies or something, but you're saying they actually post things about the college application process that might be meaningful to the people looking at it.
Correct. Yeah. Students may mention something. This is my safety school, or I really feel like I aced my interview at XYZ school, and colleges often find that. But that dynamic that you're describing certainly is there as well, where colleges see something and they want to verify this. So the Varsity Blues scandal that we've all heard so much about, I think, has raised colleges' consciousness that
there are times where students are trying to portray themselves in a way that is not accurate. And so when something unexpected or confusing shows up on an application, that can prompt that admissions team to see what they can find through a Google search or on a social media profile.
Sam, I should also mention you're with Kaplan Test Prep, not Kaplan Institute, Kaplan Test Prep. We've had another guest here before, and
that's
it was
correct.
In my brain, but you're with the Test Prep Agency, the folks who help people guide students through that process. That is also a big part of applying to college. How much of it is, how does it break down, do you think? So there's tests, scores, there are grades, you've got the other sort of intangible stuff, what you're up to, who you are, and then this piece of it, which is the stuff that shows up on social media, what you're up to and who you are and what, you know, what you're about. How does it all break down?
Absolutely. So we still would encourage students to focus on these traditional factors. Their admissions chances are still overwhelmingly decided by factors such as SAT scores, ACT scores, their GPA, their letters of recommendation, personal essay, and extracurriculars. But this is, the social media can be a wild card, negative or positive. And that's, I think that's another really interesting finding, is some students are really using social media to their advantage. You know, a student that is a musician posting samples of their music, or someone that's heavily involved in service projects showing some examples of things they've been doing in the community. So I think our minds naturally go to like these gotcha moments where students maybe posted something in a unflattering position or scenario, but there are also really positive ways that colleges can learn more about students as well.
We just got a text from a listener, 630, my son, who's a freshman at U of I, has never had a social media presence. Obviously didn't work out against him at all. He's at the University of Illinois, a great school. Do you typically say that can be a problem?
I think sometimes students may overemphasize this and say, okay, well, now I've got to develop this really elaborate social media strategy. But one of the findings from the survey is that only 20% of college admissions officers said this is a regular practice that they do. So you don't want listeners to take away that every admissions officer is seeing this and engaging in this kind of research every time. There's a good chance you really put your heart and soul into some great post, hoping that a college will see it. They may never discover it. They may never be searching. But you also just want to be conscious that they could be. And so it's kind of an awareness versus a strategy.
Yeah, another one, 573, part of her sorority. I'll just sum this one up because it's a long text. But I was on the committee. Our only job was to go through their social media pages to see if there was anything that was, quote, problematic. How far back do they go? Because you think about it, college, you know, you're young there. If you go back 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years, you're really young and you're still learning about life and you might post something irresponsible. Do you just suggest going back and deleting it when you're applying for college?
I think it is useful to think, what have I shared publicly that may be unflattering and that may not be consistent with what I want to portray, whether it's to a college or a future employer? I think that's, if that's the takeaway that people take from this information, I think that's a useful and constructive one. If it's public, then that means that it's discoverable by anyone. I think students have also gotten a bit more savvy on their privacy settings and realize, okay, what am I sharing with just one individual? What am I sharing with just my own friends or followers or network? And what is public? And I think that's another takeaway from this. Yeah. Not only what has been shared, but with whom has it been shared?
Yeah, important stuff. Sam Pritchard, thanks for talking about it. Kaplan Test Prep is where he's from. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Enjoy the afternoon. Coming up here on WGN, trending topics, including the lack of sexy ads, but the sexy Super Bowl halftime. So it kind of worked a little different than it has in years past. We've got, remember the sexy supermodels of years past? You saw a lot of that, the Cindy Crawford ad, all those things. You didn't see that this year. The closest thing was one was about love, the Google ad, which a lot of people liked. Some people even shed a tear a little bit during that particular ad. Very powerful one, I thought. We've got more coming up, including some things related to Chicago from the Super Bowl, coming up in Trending Topics here on WGN. All right, Lauren and Steve, you guys have any favorite Super Bowl ad off the top of your head?
Well, I'm going with Groundhog Day.
Yes.
That was a good one.
Chicago Ties shot partially here, right? Bill Murray, we all love him. Let's play a little bit of that ad. We got it here. It's Murray and Punxsutawney Phil trapped in a time loop. We're queuing that one up for you. So it was shot in Woodstock Square.
I'm sorry. We knew they were out there, right? There was some reporting that Bill Murray was seen in Woodstock. Yeah.
Huh.
And then someone said, yeah, and it's the game's on Groundhog Day. So it kind of wasn't too surprising.
I didn't hear about that either.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's my newscast. You guys should tune in sometime.
We're listening. Are you kidding? Can't hear everything, but I guess I didn't connect it to a Super Bowl ad. I think Bill Murray occasionally comes in for like charity events, and you see the Murray family involved in different things. I had no idea. And here it is. We've queued that up.
Okay, campers, rise and shine. It's Groundhog Day. And don't forget your booties, because it's cold out there today.
Phil? Phil?
No, not you.
It's me, man, Ryerson.
Okay, little fella. Good job.
That's different.
Good job.
Hey! He's got the groundhog! Phil?
So it's Ford Jeep, and that sometimes escapes you, but it was great. I mean, it's top of the list of favorite Super Bowl ads, just about every list I saw. It was in there.
Yeah, I love that one.
It's kind of crazy how many brands teamed up to pretty much share commercials, like Tide
and Bud Light.
Bud
Light did it, but Procter & Gamble did it, too, with a bunch of their products.
Yeah.
I think that's the Tide one. I also liked the Little Caesars one, the best things in sliced bread.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
It was. Speaking of Woodstock, the Punxsutawney Phil groundhog, the actual groundhog from Woodstock, the Woodstock groundhog, I should say. Willie, that's his name. I was looking for his name. He says we're going to have an early spring. So that was happening while the Super Bowl, or just the morning of Super Bowl Sunday. So that's kind of cool. That's what the groundhog says, the weather rodent. So if you listen to that, that's you got that going for you. Dwayne Johnson and Oprah, they were in a Super Bowl ad. Did you guys know this? It was right before the big game, so it didn't air actually during the Super Bowl.
I did see it.
We have a little bit of Oprah and Dwayne Johnson.
Hey, Oprah.
Yeah, Dwayne.
We're running.
Yeah.
We're mates. You think of what I'm thinking?
I'm in. You in?
I'm in. 2020 vision in focus.
Woo! 2020.
So they're running on a treadmill. That's why you can hear them kind of like, you know, doing that thing. I didn't see that one. You saw it, Lori?
Yeah. I didn't quite get it.
Was it for the treadmills or?
No, it's something running.
Oh.
Yeah, they're running mates.
Yeah, they're running mates. He tweeted it out. Here's our Super Bowl spot that just aired with my trainer, Oprah. Choose your running mates wisely and tag your wellness partner. So it's about running mates. You're right. And she is a Weight Watch spokesperson, Weight Watchers, but it wasn't specifically for that. It was for that running mates thing.
Oh.
Pretty cool. See the Big O doing that. Beyonce and Jay-Z, they were sitting during the national anthem at the Super Bowl. People were talking about that they were kind of in their, what were they in a suite? Did you see them? Lauren, at the time they did it.
I don't remember seeing them live while watching the game, but the pictures are going around.
Yes, that's it. So they said that they sat during it. Strangely, though, Jay-Z did have a big part in choreographing the halftime show. So he was helping Shakira and Jennifer Lopez put that together. His company, Roc Nation, was part of the whole thing.
I'd love to see him try and do all those dance moves.
Oh, anybody other than those two. I don't know how they pulled it off. Guns N' Roses coming to Wrigley Field this summer. Anybody want to go to that?
No.
I don't want to pay for it. I'll go.
If it's free, it's me. Yes. I'm totally up for it. I think most concerts at Wrigley Field, they're worth going to. Even if you're not totally like huge fan of the band, it's just such a fun place to catch a concert. Saw Jimmy Buffett there. It was
amazing. I saw was Jimmy Buffett, I think, too.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah,
wasn't it like
fun.
A really warm summer day?
Beautiful.
Just love it. Chicago suing Rockford-based coffee company for allegedly ripping off the CFD logo, the Chicago Fire Department logo. It's a coffee company, and they've got a logo that looks a lot like CFD. So they're suing them to say, hey, not okay.
And I didn't think of it about the logo for the Chicago Fire Department, but they are very similar if you look at them. But the Rockford company's owned by firefighters, I think, are retired firefighters.
Oh.
Some of the profits go to firefighters.
Oh.
So you'd think that, maybe Chicago did try to do this amicably, but you'd think they could have worked something out there.
You do. I guess the fire department's position, at least in the lawsuit, is that they're saying that it gives the impression that the city has endorsed or sponsored the business in some way, and they don't want that kind of confusion to happen. So they're protecting their trademark for CFD. See what happens there. Pamela Anderson and John Peters, did you hear about this? Split They were married. I'm not sure we knew they were married, but they were. And now they split after 12 days.
12 days? Wow.
12 days. Apparently, he was into her way back in the day. And then they got together and they got married.
Who's the groom?
Peters. John Peters. He has produced a lot of films, including the Barbara Streisand-led version of Star Is Born.
Right.
And Batman in 89. They dated 30 years ago, briefly. And both of them married both of them four times each, got together, and they say life is a journey and love is a process, and we're no longer together.
Oh, good grief.
12 days. Doesn't that beat Kim Kardashian's?
I was going to say, that sounds like a new record almost.
Yeah, 12 days. Okay, the Poppy Bowl. Anyone watch the Poppy Bowl?
I did not get to see the Poppy Bowl.
I didn't see it this year either. I usually like to, you know, go over just for one brief moment, but there's some good news, because all of those adorable little puppies that were featured in the Puppy Bowl have been adopted.
Aw, yay.
So cute.
Did you hear about the Chiefs player that paid off all of the adoption fees at a shelter after winning yesterday?
Oh, I love that.
I know. I was very happy to see that. He did like a snow angel in the confetti.
Which was perfect.
Yes. And then paid off all the shelter fees. I thought that was great.
That is so cool. I love how they give out the Lombardi trophy. So cute. It's like they got it down after so many years of doing that whole thing. Guys, I want to ask you about this, because this is a story that's leading a lot of newscasts today across the Chicago area, and it is trending as well. Lincoln Park High School students, the basketball team, there was a letter that went home yesterday that said that the principal and the assistant principal have been removed from their positions, and that the team has now forfeited their season.
And the coach had already been removed.
It's all over some inappropriate behavior. And this is what's so fascinating to me. Have a non-sponsored school trip over winter break, but there was some sort of sexual misconduct, and it did involve social media.
So I know there's going to be a parents meeting tonight that the school is going to talk more about this, but I don't know that they're going to say anything more than that anyway.
Right.
They're going to.
I think the students are going to talk, don't they? I mean, you just feel as if by now it's gone around the school.
But, you know, to end the basketball program.
Isn't that a big deal?
Pretty amazing, yeah.
That piece of it I was somewhat surprised by. Now, maybe why wouldn't you just take the students who are involved and say, You guys have to sit out?
Because I was almost going to say, well, maybe they all are, which is wrong. I shouldn't make that assumption, right. But that's kind of the implication that they're doing by punishing everyone. You know, they're implying that they all have something that they've done wrong. And maybe they do. Maybe they have.
Yeah, I maybe they all were involved. Is that possible? I guess we don't know what it is. It just seemed like, gee, what a drastic response. I mean, the principal's fired, the coach is fired, the assistant principal or removed from their positions. That's fired, right? And now the team is forfeiting its entire season. Plus, they were doing really well.
Yeah.
They had a great record.
That's too bad.
So it is too bad to see if there are any of the innocent, you know, kids on that team, that they're going to be deprived of that opportunity. That just, wow, seems harsh, but we'll hold out our judgment until we see, I guess, tonight, right, Steve? We're going to find out a little more.
Well, parents are going to talk to parents tonight, but I just don't see there being too much information coming out of it. They're not going to give the specifics.
Yeah, I wonder. You do. Paul Rudd is having to hold a kegger at his house. This is trending as well. He apparently joked about it, and now he's going to do it. He said, kegger at my mom's house after the Chiefs' big win. He said, somebody better let my mom know. He did the same thing after the Royals won, I guess, in 2015.
He just seems like a guy you'd like to hang out with.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Great keg party, right? Great actor, too. So that's going to do it for trending topics. We're going to check in with Ro Khan. He's got a big interview with Kim Fox coming up on his show. And we'll talk to him coming up here on WGN.